Welcome to Off Mute, a podcast about women in cybersecurity.
We're Sophie,
Isabella,
and Sam,
three cyber fast streamers just beginning our careers in the government security profession.
Join us as we hear from women across government about their careers so far, the challenges they've faced, and the great achievements they've made.
Welcome to Off Mute. Today we're joined by Anna, a senior threat hunter at the Home Office.
Thanks for having me. So I'm Anna. I work in the Cybersecurity Operations Centre in DDA, which is the Digital Data and Technology Department in the Home Office. And yeah, I've been here just coming up for 3 years now. So it's been an adventure so far. So
I started on one of the apprenticeships that the Home Office do. And really it was just to try and get my foot in the door within cybersecurity and in the civil service. That was really daunting to start with because we started on day one of lockdown, our learning provider ditched us right at the start. So it was a bit of a tough start to it. And then from that just kind of moved teams in order to work on different projects and have now ended up in the threat operations team doing some threat hunting work now, which has been interesting.
Yeah, you happy you sort of ended up there?
Definitely, yeah. I think that's probably one of the things I'm glad I stuck it out. The first 6 months, yeah, were really challenging. So I think if I'd sort of given up there, then definitely wouldn't be able to work with some really cool people and doing different projects.
Yeah, that's good. Let's kind of take a more higher level approach now and look at maybe how would you define cybersecurity? And in kind of your opinion, what do you think the future of that looks like?
Yeah, so I think just at a really high level, it's just looking after your like computer systems and networks and making sure that there's no malicious activity. I think when you start looking into it more, there's so many different pockets within cybersecurity. So we've got threat hunting, threat intelligence, vulnerability management, and then there's also the obviously like the protective monitoring side. But within that, there's kind of such a vast field that people can look into. So if you've got a specific interest in something, you can usually find it and work on it, which is really cool.
Do you want to tell us a little bit more specifically about like threat hunting, because that's kind of your remit?
Yeah, of course. So our team proactively goes and interprets threat intelligence and we go and try and find it in our network. So luckily, most of the time we can't ever find it, which is good, because obviously it would be a breach in that case. So we then put in different queries or different use cases to alert if the email gateways or the firewalls did happen to let something in from a malicious actor, or if we had an insider threat, making sure that we've got the right alerts in place to notify the right people on it.
And I think maybe for some people listening, that sounds like super technical and super high level. But you didn't really start off in a technical pursuit in a career, did you, really?
Yeah, exactly. So I started at university, I did English Literature and American Studies, which is such a good degree and gives you, it's really, again, it's just really wide, kind of a theme with how my brain works is just keep things wide. Yeah, so I came in just with sort of like a little bit of data analysis background, some transferable skills from doing a humanities degree. From there, just if you're able to sort of learn, if you want to learn, if you've got an interest, then you can just sort of take yourself down a technical road. So I think I came in at a good time into cyber.
And was there that particular motivation for it being cyber specifically, or?
I think I just wanted more of a sort of tangible feel that I was actually kind of helping people, protecting people, and cyber's just expanding constantly. We've all got a digital footprint, it's just getting wider and wider, so it seemed like a really interesting field to get into, and again just so many options within that as well, and also just to be a bit nosy as well, see what's going on in the world.
That kind of touches on, I guess, maybe expectations you had before you'd started and then how they've materialized since. So before you got involved in cyber, what did you think it was going to be like originally, and then has it lived up to those expectations, or is it vastly different?
I did think there'd be a lot more eye scanners around here, to be honest, but no, it did. I thought the kind of bad expectations I had, I thought people would be really scary. Everything would be really strict with how you have to follow your work and like really strict procedures, really strict processes, but it's actually a really flexible working environment. People are really keen to help you out and really open if you kind of ask them questions. So I think that's been something I'm glad's been dispelled. And I do think it is a very male dominated place, and I had that impression before, and it is still the case, which is unfortunate. But hopefully there are some incentives out there, but I do think we've got such a diverse country, and ideally, like, all workplaces should reflect those demographics. And yeah, the cyber and the tech field is certainly lacking in that. But I think, you know, hopefully it's raised and people are trying to do things like more flexible working, and like there's a push to kind of have the tech sector outside of London a bit more. So hopefully it improves on a wider scale as well as on a smaller scale.
Yeah, and touching upon that improvement, there's sort of a severe lack of women in leadership positions, civil service specific within cyber and DDAP, but also globally in the private sector as well. So how do you sort of manage that if your managers aren't, you know, potentially feeding into like the female experience in cyber or can't relate to that? How does that affect, you know, your working environment?
Yeah, it's challenging at times because you feel, when you do speak to kind of male colleagues, they don't quite understand or they don't quite get why you may be upset at something, or they can't see certain microaggressions. So I think it's been really good. We have had a few more women join the CSOC specifically the last sort of 6 months, and that's been really encouraging because it's just a group of people that you can chat to and you can communicate issues about. So then together we've created a women, non-binary and trans group. So just having an official platform for us to chat, we've all kind of got a lot closer through that, but then it also gives us that platform when we want to raise issues to senior management or we want to create our own workshops. We've got a more sort of official space to be doing that. So I think that's helped, but yeah, definitely would like to see more female senior managers at a technical level.
And is setting up groups and networks like that something you'd encourage for other women in the workplace potentially?
Yeah, definitely. I think especially on a kind of smaller, like more local level, the civil service in general is quite good at just sort of having these large groups of, you know, women in the workplace, different diversities in the workplace. But I think sometimes when they're so large scale, people don't feel like that comfortable to raise their voices in kind of meetings where it's, you know, a couple hundred of people. So I think having smaller sort of say like 10 to 20 people, you get to really know the people that are in that group and you can really chat openly and feel confident with who you're sat around a table with. It's a bit more kind of personal, more human.
So no, it sounds like definitely a super positive thing. I'm also involved with it somewhat, so it's nice. Yeah. Like, it's such a positive thing that we're all experiencing in the workplace as well. Staying on a positive note, what do you enjoy the most about your job?
Definitely the people. It's quite cringy, but it definitely is. And I think without the right team and the right people, I would have left sort of within the first 6 months, and then again sort of at various hurdles that I've come up against in the last 3 years. It just kind of brings a more human element to what you're doing, and when you're stuck on tasks, you've always got someone to turn to. It's good as well to kind of, you get to pick people's brains, and people are really different to your way of thinking, and it's like a good sort of social people watching space. I think from a work point of view and that work slant, there's the kind of, it's very ad hoc based what we do in our team. So you're kind of always challenging yourself and pushing yourself and having to learn about something new. Sometimes that's almost too challenging, but yeah, it's a very interesting, like, fast pace to be in.
And I mean, evidently that's different than a lot of people's opinions as to cyber and tech being sat at a computer and just staring at a screen. So it's nice that there's a people aspect as well, if you're more like socially outgoing.
Yeah, definitely.
And following along a similar vein, what sort of accomplishment in your career are you most proud of today? That doesn't have to be a piece of paper or an examination or anything. Just what do you think that in your career you can say you are proudest of doing?
I think it is sort of sticking out those first 6 months. And from that, I remember it was day one of lockdown when we first started. I had no cybersecurity knowledge at all. And our learning provider, they couldn't work with us because of COVID reasons. And the workspace was figuring out how to do cybersecurity remotely, making sure it was all safe. So you kind of felt so small,
yeah,
and just
isolated yeah,
completely. Yeah. So just sticking out. And I spoke to my manager at the time, and he was just, I was just, you know, I need to leave. This is so horrible. He's like, right, okay, we'll get proactive plan in place. He put me in contact with another woman in the CSOC operations team and put me on a project that I was a lot more interested in, so I just really felt listened to. And then from that, just having really lovely team members, it just encouraged me to just keep progressing. So within then the first couple of years of working here, I managed to progress up a couple of bands quite quickly. So I think that whole trajectory in a relatively short space of time is probably what I'm proudest about.
And it probably highlights as well the positive aspects of people that you were mentioning, and people supporting and being there for you. So
yeah,
sounds like a really good work environment, to be honest. Let's move on now to maybe like your skills, and we've mentioned like technical capacity. So how have they sort of changed or developed from when you first started in the role?
Yeah, so they've just come on leaps and bounds. Yeah, I had a bit of data analysis experience. I used to work in the NHS as an information analyst, and that was pretty much just creating the graphs that we all saw during the dark times of COVID. They were transferable skills, but then working with the civil service and then also in cyber, we have all these different like free platforms that we can utilize. We're put onto a lot of in-person training, which I think really you get that practical element of what you're learning about. So I've got like a few more coding languages to add into the mix now, understand how computer networks work, which I never thought would be anything possible. I'm a bit of a technophobe outside of work, so that's kind of like a huge increase in my knowledge skills there. Everything can jump, really. It literally came in with,
I mean,
like,
you did say
nothing,
that you came in with nothing, It's nice to see how much you've improved, I guess, since not knowing anything at the start and where you are now.
Yeah, sometimes I do sort of take a step back and like, oh my God, I know stuff, which is kind of, it takes you by surprise at how much you know. You don't realize it until you're sort of reflecting on it.
Which I think can kind of help a little with imposter syndrome if you think about how far you've come.
Yeah,
and how far you've like progressed, then shuts down the little voice in your head. For listeners as well, what skills do you think are the most critical to a career in cyber?
I think just to be really nosy and to be intrigued and stuff. I think especially with cyber, there's always something new that you're going to have to learn about. So I think if you've got that attitude where you want to find out something, and you've got the determination to keep figuring out a puzzle, because it can be really frustrating work sometimes. You kind of come up against so many walls, either in terms of tooling capability, or you can't quite get one of your queries to work. You have to kind of just keep with that determination. And I think if you're open to sort of asking people for help, then you can really sort of push yourself through. And people are open that you're not going to know everything, and are quite transparent with what they do and don't know. Yeah, I'd say, yeah, just being intrigued and determined are good skills to have.
Yeah, and I think those sort of align to more soft skills as opposed to technical.
Yeah, definitely. I do think people always have that assumption that you do need the technical skills, which obviously are mandatory in some ways, but then soft skills, they're massively overlooked. And I think if you can't collaborate and contribute together, then you know, you're kind of putting yourself at a disadvantage. I think especially within cyber, if you have all these different creative brains working together, then you're putting yourself ahead of sort of machine learning and stuff that kind of limited like AI can do. So I think you're just a stronger workforce if you have that communication, and it's not just kind of individuals sat at their computers not speaking to each other.
No, 100%. I think that's reassuring to people that don't have any technical ability right now either.
You
don't need it to start off. You can always transfer into it.
Exactly, yeah.
Touching upon skills, we're just chatting about them now. How would you say you could then develop skills? Maybe less of the soft ones, which people are more used to practicing in the workplace, more of maybe some technical ones if people want to get a bit ahead. What tools could they maybe use?
Yeah, so I know it's still touching on the soft skills, but I do a lot of one-to-one shadowing with people, because I find you can just ask 100 questions that, say, a learning environment, you can't, like if it's a lab, a practical lab, you can't go back and like ask all these questions to it. You know, people can put their examples into a metaphor for you, for example. So if you don't understand something on a technical level, you can get someone to break it down a lot smaller. So I think that's a really powerful way to learn technically. And then obviously, yeah, we do have Immersive Labs and O'Reilly and the Microsoft Hub. So again, it's all that different types of training, either kind of written and practical training, in-person training. So
with something like a one-to-one, have you gotten any advice maybe about how to reach out to somebody that you want to shadow or spend some more like working time with?
Yeah, I tend to go down just trying to just have like a personal connection first and foremost, and just kind of break down, sort of, it helps with your own confidence levels if you've got a bit of a repertoire with someone, sort of that's not focused like only on work, and then you feel more comfortable to ask technical questions. And I think people always say like, oh, it sounds like a stupid question, but X, Y, and Z, and it never is. It's always something that you need an answer to, and sometimes the person you're asking, they don't even know, so that opens it up to a wider discussion. On a larger scale, there tends to be fewer women have come in with STEM degree backgrounds, so if you're kind of talking to a colleague who has a computer science master's, you're already having that inferiority. So you constantly feel like you're having to match someone with, you know, a master's degree and something that you don't have. But I think, again, it's just such a myth that you do need a computer science degree. If you're interested in it and you have the right attitude, you can get into it. And there's so many non-technical areas within cybersecurity as well that people often forget about. So like cyber policy, for example, or just even communication and comms around that. So different business engagement areas too.
In terms of maybe like management and leadership styles, I know you've got a little bit experience now of like managing and being in a more senior role. So what do you think, as you're starting out on a more like leadership based journey, the skills that you've taken on have been the most positive for your leadership style?
I think just figuring out who you're trying to mentor or lead, and just figure out how they work, because you can't just force your own ideas onto someone. You need to have that back and forth and figure out what they need from you just as much as what you can get from them. So I think just, yeah, having that open communication right from the start. You know, how do you want to be managed? Do you want, you know, loads of kind of check-ins? Do you want to just be left to your own devices? And I think always just having a plan of action as well. I love a plan, and I think even if you want to be left to your own devices, you still need a kind of something actionable that you can work towards. And again, a lot of the times in cyber, you're given a very large task and it sounds quite daunting, so just breaking it down into smaller bite-sized chunks, I think, just helps with the flow and helps with motivation.
When the shoe's on the other foot as well, and you're the one being, you know, managed, what do you think's the best skills you've had as somebody being managed as opposed to being the manager?
Just someone listening to you and someone who's like open to what you're saying, and if it's something that then they don't know about, they'll kind of go off and find the answer for you. Or in the past, if I've raised, say for example, being interrupted by colleagues on calls, then I've raised it to my manager and he'll be like, okay, if I notice that on a call, I'll also sort of voice it there and then as well as you, so you don't kind of feel as intimidated. So just being really heard, I think, yeah, is important.
We mentioned there about your manager, but have you got any mentors at work or people that inspire you or you look up to?
I think just all the women in our women non-binary and trans group, there's just such a big range of personalities and people have so many different skills there, all come from different backgrounds, and it's just a really encouraging place, and you just feel like you have this sisterhood and, you know, somewhere to talk and share experiences with, and you feel very, very seen, and people respect like each other's personalities and stuff. So it's such a really invigorating to be around people like that. I think from other stances, we do have like really lovely male colleagues as well, and some really intellectual ones, and they just will obsess over something so tiny, but they'll know so much about it, and it's really impressive when you kind of pick someone's brains and they just have a fountain of knowledge.
So how do you sort of feel about like hybrid working or working in person? Do you prefer working in person or?
I do personally, yeah. I think it takes a lot longer with hybrid working remotely, it takes a lot longer to build those connections, and, you know, people, if they don't have their cameras on, or you're just all on really big calls where people aren't really, there's only a couple of people talking, it takes a lot longer to make those relationships. But I think it's also the responsibility of people have been there a bit longer to like utilize their relationships that they've made, make more introductions to people that are kind of new to the team, and just kind of maintain that inclusive workspace rather than it being sort of a drop in the ocean and a phase, for example. Like, I hope with this group that we just managed to maintain the momentum of it and just keep it kind of a permanent factor in CSOC now.
Yeah, and I know it's not always an option for everyone to work in person, and remote working obviously feeds into that, but do you have any tips maybe for like networking or communicating online?
I think just going to the like non-work talks, you tend to meet even just like one or two kind of connections or a bit of small talk, or people will have a random fact that comes up that you can then, if you then see them in person at a group event, you can sort of break that ice initially a lot quicker with them. So yeah, do go to the the kind of the quizzes and, yeah. and the calls, and if you can have your camera on as well, just again to speed up the connection.
Well, let's ask an even bigger question now. Thinking long term, what direction do you see your career going in? You know, are you planning on staying in cyber?
I think so. I think I'd probably go more down the threat intelligence and online harms route. And again, just kind of keep up with me being a very nosy person. But also, like, I feel like I can actually, I'm helping people. So maybe working on sort of a smaller scale in terms of like online harms. There's also an increase in organizations who are working with psychologists as well now. And they work with therapists. And you kind of study the pattern of extremist online behavior. And then the aim is to try and intercept that before it turns extreme. And then liaise with psychologists and try and prevent some of that extremist behaviour that you can kind of see forming from the early stages. So I think that would be something really, really rewarding. Obviously, it would be quite intense at times, but yeah, something like that. Or to kind of go down the path of just encouraging more girls and women into the cyber world is something I feel really passionate about, and have gone to a few schools in the past just to kind of do talks of, look, you can do English at university, you can do a humanities degree and then move into cyber. So just kind of, if there's, you know, a job out there, I could do that every day, just going around encouraging people. That would be,
I think it's nice for girls in schools as well to see other girls standing up there being like, this is what I do. It's not just boys that play video games that go into computer science or whatever.
Yeah, definitely.
Could you see yourself ever joining the private sector? If so, do you suppose the roles and environments would differ? Would it be a similar role, do you think?
I don't really see it in the immediate future. I think from what I've heard, there are larger budgets and sometimes better tooling capability.
Which I don't think is a surprise, really.
Exactly. Yeah. So that would definitely be a benefit. But then for me personally, I don't think I'd feel motivated sort of working for a corporate hierarchy. I do keep an eye, obviously, on those organisations that are kind of benefiting society still and kind of doing good things for the environment, doing good things for people, have kind of a good diversity and inclusion workforce. So yeah, never say never. I don't really plan too far in advance, so we'll just see what happens.
Well, let's maybe do a little retrospective now and think, is there anything that you would have done differently in your career, even as far back as your studies?
I don't, in terms of the choices, like the career choices and studies, I think I keep them the same. I absolutely love my degree. It was so interesting and just different. You kind of, 3 years of your life where you get to kind of read up on R&B and like noir fiction. You don't get to do
that
in your job.
Very fun.
So would not change that in a second. I think though I'd be a lot kinder to myself. I was so harsh to myself and be, you know, you don't know this, you need to know this. And just be a lot more flexible with kind of my approach to work and, you know, make the most of flexible working and just asking for more help a lot sooner on. And also to start the women non-binary and trans group a lot earlier, because I think it's only been going for a few months, but loads of positives have come from it already. So
I like all of those in terms of changing what you would have done differently, because they were all just positives that I think you would have rather got done sooner. So then what advice would you give someone who wants to explore a cyber career, maybe switch paths or literally just starting out?
I think it would just to be curious. Again, it's another theme from this, is just to be really curious with what you're doing and where possible make use of kind of the free resources. Again, I think there's that stereotype that you need kind of a lot of money to get into tech, or like you need all this equipment and all this tooling and you need to sign up to do really expensive accreditations. But yeah, ignore the accreditations on the job specs, because you'll have the transferable skills and you can take free online courses that will kind of inform you on those accreditations. I think they're often quite a big barrier for people applying for jobs when they see this huge list of accreditations. But if you kind of pick into them, it's just a lot of transferable skills within that. So yeah, just to be curious, make use of what is out there for free and just try and slant that kind of stereotype that it's just a load of rich white men in tech.
Well, maybe we can dispel some of those rumours as well about what, you know, working in a male-dominated field is like. So we've spoken about the diversity and inclusion within like cyber security. and it's sort of an ever-growing profession, an ever-growing workforce, why do you think maybe that the numbers aren't expanding as much in terms of female workforce as opposed to overall workforce?
Mm-hmm. I think it's probably a lot to do with retention, and the civil service does have flexible working. It's probably one of the best flexible working kind of places to be. But yeah, in terms of kind of retention, it's just not equipped as well. So there's kind of, in terms of like maternity leave, there's not as many options. A lot of senior female managers, they kind of stay for sort of a year and then they move on. And I don't know exactly why, but I can assume it's to do with kind of, you know, very male dominated, like not having kind of the right infrastructure in place to kind of support that more flexible working when you're at that super senior level.
Is the group that you set up, the network, the women and non-binary trans group, are they maybe discussing like menopause at all? Because I know that's a massive conversation at the moment.
Yeah, so because I think a lot of people who work in cyber tend to be a lot younger as well. The advice when I've spoken to sort of external speakers who are looking to come in and give us talks has been sort of get a grip on menopause and like how that impacts people at work, what early menopause may look like in terms of people's working patterns or kind of the struggles that they may come across with brain fog at work, for example. So yeah, definitely just kind of knowledge is key, seems to be the recurring message there. And again, just kind of we're looking to, well, Isabel yourself are doing an allyship presentation and a recruit to get the boys on board to become officially female allies. So again, with that, I'd hope that menopause would be covered within that, and again, just educate the men on it as much as the women and like younger women who need to kind of learn about it for later on in life, and making sure we've got kind of procedures or processes in place if it needs to be something that's more concrete rather than just talking about it.
In terms of representation as well, do you think it would help a lot more women, especially starting off in their careers, if we had senior leaders that, you know, looked like them, whether that be female or people of colour or from, you know, a lower socioeconomic background? Do you think it would help and encourage people to reach leadership positions as well, and sort of help with that retention as well?
Yeah, definitely. And I think like just to hear more from those people that have those like different diverse backgrounds as well, because it's really limited with what you kind of get to hear. You have to really kind of, it feels like you have to go out your way quite a lot to find those people. And then the men that kind of are in those positions, they don't really talk about it either. So kind of there's not much conversation going on with kind of how to get into senior management or kind of how to get into strategy making and what to do when you've got all this experience, where to go next. So I think absolutely, yeah, just seeing and hearing from so many more diverse people and just encouraging the kind of, you know, tech up north, that kind of movement there. There's loads going on up in like Leeds and Newcastle at the moment, and just kind of encouraging just the diversity as well, and putting that focus on, you know, you don't need all this equipment and tech and all this knowledge to be able to get into it.
Do you think in your career it's been mostly self-driven, or have you had a lot of support along the way?
Definitely support. I think for each of the roles that I've gone for, it was because other people, other team members or managers said, no, you can do it, you should apply for it. It plays into that that idea that kind of women only feel comfortable applying for sort of 80% of the job. If they know that they can do 80% of the job, they'll then apply, whereas men, it's, I don't know, like, I don't know the actual stats, but like 30.
I know I've seen a similar statistic, yeah, where sort of women doubt themselves more because they think they can't do everything.
Exactly. So yeah, without kind of, you know, a supportive team and, you know, other women just sort of being like, yes, you can do it, you know, throw your hat into the ring as well. So yeah, self-driven, but obviously that comes with a lot of doubts. So having people around you that sort of push you over the line to submit an application, go for an interview, that's definitely kind of, I think, why I'm here as well today.
That's good though. I think that's also why you've been so positive about like communication and talking to people.
Yeah, I think it's good to be transparent with what you don't know. I think, you know, I always think people know so much more than they do, or they appear like they know so much more. But I think, you know, a bit of self-deprecation kind of goes a long way and makes you more personable and more human.
And like you said,
human.
It's ever-changing. Nobody knows everything.
Exactly.
Like, they physically couldn't.
It would be impossible. You would have to be an AI robot.
So just want to say thank you so much, Anna, for, you know, providing a wealth of knowledge about how you furthered your career and kind of a good insight into a career in cybersecurity. Would you potentially like to leave our listeners with a recommendation, either professional, personal, whatever, book, TED Talk, podcast, whatever you've got?
For in terms of books, there's one called Invisible Women by Caroline Criado Perez, and that just talks about the kind of the differences in how the world is kind of made and catered for a man. So stuff like seatbelts or air conditioning. And it gives loads of really kind of tiny examples where you're like, oh yeah, actually a seatbelt is not made for a woman's body, or it's always really cold in an office because men work better at a colder temperature. So just think that's really interesting and a good reflection on kind of society and how you need to sort of keep your head screwed on and keep fighting the good fight.
I need to give that a read. I haven't read that, so I will do. Thank you, though.
Thanks for having me.
Anytime. Thanks for listening to Off Mute, with a special thanks to today's guest, Anna. This episode was hosted by Isabella.
Written by Sophie.
And produced by Sam.